Big show for you here today. It is Chris Allen making his triumphant return to the podcast to break down a little bit of winners and losers coming out of free agency. Yes, whose stock is up, whose stock is down. We talk Ashton Jeanty. We talk DK Metcalf. We talk Devon Achane. We talk plenty of players here. Josh Downs. I try to show some restraint when Chris brings up Josh Downs. Hopefully you guys are proud of me. We shall see. All right. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that, it's been a minute, but he's back. It's our friend, Chris Allen. Chris, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, man, I've been telling people since I got back from Indianapolis that if there's any chance that you get to go to the Combine, you should obviously go to the Combine if you ever get a chance to. Because, sure, you can go to Indy for the steakhouses and get your fill of horseradish-filled cocktail sauce. You can go to Indy in order to see the coaches and media personalities that we see on TV all the time. I mean, did I shake Sean Payton's hand when we walked into one of the steakhouses there? Absolutely, I did. Did one of our friends, Drew Davenport, run after Rich Eisen down the street nor take a picture of him? Absolutely. But I go to Indianapolis for the chance to run into two award-winning podcasters and an award-winning producer. And I did just that when I ran into you and Nate Tyson, of course, our own guy working behind the scenes, Colin Brennan. So no, man, I'm doing wonderful. It's now that time of the offseason where we do get a chance to have some drama, we get some news, we get a mix of that, but at the same time, we get a chance to also kind of let those takes marinate for a bit since there's not that hustle and bustle of the regular season. So no, man, happy to be back here and talk with you for a bit.
Hey, big dog, let me tell you what, this is one award-winning podcaster to another because you are a big part of us taking that award home. So it was good to see you in Indianapolis. There's no question about that. Even though, like, I had to sit there and think to myself, like, as you're talking, like, what night did I see Chris? Because everything just kind of blurs together. Like, I know we hung out, but I'm like, what night was that? Because the whole week just kind of blurs together, yeah. Which is also what happens here during NFL free agency week. I'm like not 100% convinced that all of these moves have happened either in the last 12 hours or the last 12 days, because this week has felt super, super long, a lot of twists and turns, but that's what we're going to be doing today. We're going to be breaking down some of the things that have happened here over the last week in NFL free agency. And look, Chris, when you're a big time podcast like we are, sometimes you just got to take the layups. Okay. You got to take the easy content. You got to fill the docket. We're doing winners and losers today. Okay. Is winners and losers a stupid exercise after free agency or really anything? Yeah. Sure. It is absolutely ridiculous. However, that's what we're going to do. Okay. That's what we're going to do here. Whose stock is up, whose stock is down coming out of some of these moves in free agency. In the first block of the show, we're going to start positive. We each have three winners from free agency week. Second block of the show, that's when we're going to get a little negative. We're going to talk three losers from each of us coming out of free agency. And then we're going to finish it up with one big question we still have after free agency week. So let's waste no more time, Chris. Let's get into it. Let's talk winners and losers here and start with those winners. Who is your first player that you think is a big winner coming out of free agency week?
So I'll say my first big winner is Jaguars running back Bashaul Tuten. And I'll set it up like this, because when I think about running backs and their potential to move into the upper echelon of the fantasy football rankings, it's two things. One, how many phases does your team see you playing in? And I'll elaborate that in just a second. But then also, are you part of a productive or efficient offense? I think the second question we can answer pretty easily, right? I mean, Liam Cohen, after taking the sticks and controlling the Jaguars offense last season, I mean, I think that was a success in my book. I mean, top half of the league marks in total yards per game, EPA per play, third in plays run in their opponent's red zone. I mean, I think that's all while managing, what, a decline in their second year receiver in Brian Thomas Jr., an injury to their first round rookie, Travis Hunter Jr. I mean, all of those things. I mean, it's like when we're talking through some of the games last year, when you and I were recapping games, it was like, how is this Jaguars team going to continue marching forward? But still, they were productive, wound up getting to the playoffs, and essentially just a drive away from getting over the Bills and able to keep going in their quest for a Super Bowl. But I think for the first question I was talking about, like how many phases do we really see a running back playing in? I mean, that requires a little bit more thought. I mean, our friend and colleague, Dwayne McFarlane, like the colleague in the fantasy space. I mean, he works with me over Fantasy Life, and he has the utilization report, which breaks down all the fantasy relevant facets of a player's deployment. So when I say phases, I mean, I'm talking about like what parts of the game do you really think a team is willing to feature that running back? Are you a long down and distance grinder, kind of like a Rashad White-ish type of guy? Your short yardage option like Kareem Hunt in the later stages of his career, or your receiver like Kenny Gainwell? And I think in Tootin's case, he was either able to match or exceed Travis Etienne's efficiency despite fewer touches. I mean, as the early down runner, Tootin had a higher success rate while seeing a similar percentage of stacked boxes, and Tootin broke more tackles on a per carry basis than Travis Etienne. And on third downs, he was just as effective. I mean, 5 first downs on 12 touches. I mean, over like just close to 50% conversion rate. So, I mean, the same held true in short yardage situations. I mean, another 5 first downs and one of them being a touchdown against the Raiders. I believe that was in like week 9 or so. As a receiver, I mean, despite just earning 14 targets, I mean, average 8 yards after the catch. And I remember that specifically, that average 8 yards per catch, because that's exactly how far he ran past both Cam Sample and Shamar Stewart for his receiving touchdown when they played my Bengals back in week 2. So I think I see all of those different pieces of Tootin's game really coming together. And with the path for him to have some more production here in 2026, I mean, yeah, could we see a bit more of LaQuint Allen? Absolutely. Could we see Trevor Lawrence continue to like run the rock in like every now and again as he has over these past 2 seasons? Absolutely. But I think with the void that Travis Etienne has left, Tootin has shown enough in order to fill enough of that and expand on more of what we saw back in 2025.
Yeah, just to table set here for people who are not living and dying by NFL news. Congratulations on you guys, by the way, for having a life. We don't know what that's like. Well, Chris actually does have a life. I certainly do not have a life. So for those folks who haven't been dialed in completely, Travis Etienne signs a 4-year deal to go to the New Orleans Saints. That was pretty telegraphed. I don't think there was really any resistance that the Jaguars put up to keep Travis Etienne. I think he was always going to price himself out of their range. Obviously, he is a holdover from the last staff. 2 head coaches ago, actually, he was drafted by Urban Meyer. Remember when Urban Meyer drafted, telegraphed that he actually wanted Kadarius Toney, and then he's like, well, we'll just get Travis Etienne to catch passes. And so,
what a disaster.
God, what a time. What a time kicking in human history that was.
He kicked the kicker and everything. Oh, that was crazy.
Was at the bar getting the lap dance, after a Thursday night game. I'm never going to forget that was the Urban Meyer era is one of those things, which is very rare that this happened, but that rises to the level of like, I got to tell my wife about this. Like there's very few things that happen in the NFL universe. And I'm like, she'll find this interesting. But I was like, I got to tell after that the bar incident, I got to clue the wife into this one. That was very much worth it. I will never forget the Urban Meyer era as much as Jaguars fans probably do. But anyways, Etienne holdover from that draft several staffs ago, he was always going to move on. So he goes to the Saints on a 4-year deal. Then the Jaguars to replace him, they signed Chris Rodriguez to a 2-year deal, formerly of the Washington Commanders. It's a $10 million deal, $6.2 million guaranteed, which is not chump change. And I actually kind of forgot about this. He was with Liam Cohen when he was working at the University of Kentucky back in 2021. He had 238 touches in that season under Liam Cohen before Cohen bolted to the NFL to go to the Rams before he actually went back to Kentucky in 2023. So they do have some history together. So Chris, I wouldn't say this is a complete nothing burger signing by the Jaguars, but I was kind of surprised to see my entire timeline at different points when I checked in really over the last like 24 hours at war with each other over like Bashel Tootin versus does Chris Rodriguez matter? I was like, guys, it's March. We got a long way to go, but you clearly don't think that this is that much of a needle mover for Tootin's fantasy stock.
Well, no, because I still think it's going to increase. Now, do I think he's going to ascend to the same levels as Travis Etienne was, even from an ADP perspective? No. But should we at least consider the path for him to get into that range, or at least something close to that over these next 3, 4, 5 months as we get into training camp and as we hear more about how he's integrating into the offense along with Chris Rodriguez and the rest of the team? I think that is more reasonable than saying, let's just copy and paste whatever Travis Etienne did and move Bashel Tootin into that role. That's where I'm at as of right now. Because, like, again, Looking at how he performed back in 2025 and how well he can play in each of those roles, I still see him kind of mapping more so into that skill set of what Travis Etienne is leaving behind than what Chris Rodriguez showed with the Commanders back in 2025 as well. Could Rodriguez also factor in as the goal line type of guy, maybe short yardage type of carry option for the Jaguars in 2026? Absolutely. But I would at least think of Tootin at this point as more of the, let's say, 50 to 60% of the carries, that type of a role for him that at least gets him into that RB2-ish consideration more so than anything else.
Yeah, I like the way you frame that there. I really wonder where he's going to kind of settle from an ADP perspective, because people are going to be excited about him. And he is a very exciting player. He's explosive. He showed some flashes last year. There's no question about that. A lot of the advanced metrics were pretty good on him. And famously, again, you can pick your kind of fun little touchstone narrative here for these Jaguars backs, because James Gladstone, when he was interviewing for the Jaguars job, was talking about Bashel Tootin as one of his target players last year, and then he ends up getting the Jags job. He ends up drafting Bashel Tootin, so there's clearly a lot of investment in him. They were pretty not hard on him, I would say, but they were pretty like, hey, we got to get this fumbling problem worked out in minicamp, and for the most part it didn't really turn itself out to be a big issue. So Tootin's a guy that's going to be very, I would say, expensive in drafts this year. I'm waiting for Justin Boone to respond to me, because I just texted him. I said, where do you think you're going to rank Tootin next year? Because I didn't want to spend all the time crashing my computer to figure that out here. So he's got the text bubble up. I will update the people as we go here in terms of where Boone thinks he is going to rank, where he's going to rank Tootin, because I think that will tell us a lot in terms of what it's going to cost to draft him. Come on, Boone, like, hustle up here. Anyways, we'll come back to that. I'll get to my first winner here, which is another rookie running back from last year, Ashton Jeanty. I think we got to say he is a winner coming out of free agency. Tyler Linderbaum signed to be the center for the Las Vegas Raiders. That's a big upgrade there. They paid a premium to get him, but Linderbaum's a good player. At the pivot point there, he's going to be a really good fit in Kubiak's like zone blocking run scheme. I think that's pretty successful. Also, just the entire Raiders operation is just going to be much more buttoned up and professional than what it was last year. They've made additions across the board. The team is going to be better. That's good news for Jeanty. They're obviously going to draft Fernando Mendoza at the first overall pick. That has been, you know, kind of telegraphed at this point. So I just think everything that's happened over the last week, including the fact that Max Crosby had his trade voided, which obviously we haven't talked about because it's a fantasy show, but it's a pretty insane storyline. But even the fact that Max Crosby for now remains a member of the Las Vegas Raiders, that's actually a pretty good thing for Ashton Jeanty, because it will make them a better team if he is on the roster, which I'm still skeptical of. But right now, I don't think you could say, I think you could say this has been a pretty good offseason to this point for the Raiders in terms of them being a better team than they were last year, which is good news for the starting running back, even if the biggest thing is like, hey, they brought in Tyler Linderbaum, the blocking is going to be better.
Hey, any way to improve the way that the Raiders approach their run blocking scheme, I would say, is a plus for Ashton Jeanty. I mean, 18 running backs with more than 50% of their team's carries last week. I mean, Ashton Jeanty, 17th in adjusted yards before contact, and he also had the most rushing attempts where he was contacted at or behind the line of scrimmage, around 54% of his carries. So if they can shift any of that by either changing the blocking scheme, but then also if they have some, let's say, higher level of competency, because I don't want to really completely disparage Geno Smith, but still, if they can have a little bit better competency under center with Fernando Mendoza coming in, at least assuming where he's coming in and playing at some point this season, because the reports have been that, yes, they might draft him, but even if they do, they're going to try and sit him for at least some period of time. There have been rumors floating around about they try and sign guys like, or veterans like Kirk Cousins to maybe start the season and then maybe let Mendoza take over at some point midway through the year. But either way, if there's, again, a higher level of competency around that entire passing game to take some pressure off the running game, add in a guy like Jalen Naylor, who I thought was actually a pretty underrated signing for the Raiders, yeah, and maybe we get a little bit of progression for somebody like Jack Besh maybe here in the second season as well. There's enough that can pulls enough attention away from Ashton Jeanty that I do think, I agree with you, that he's a winner this year, at least for this offseason so far.
Yeah, last year I was very much just not interested in drafting Ashton Jeanthe in the first round. Nate and I did the whole show where we looked at like guys who were going really high in ADP relative to like their projected offensive efficiency, and the Raiders stuck out for those two teams, for those two guys, Jeanthe and Bowers. This year there's going to be that same iron price from an ADP standpoint. I'm probably more open to it this year. Again, the Linderbaum addition's great. Jalen Naylor coming in. The guys they've got on defense, I think, will make that unit better. But to me, it's just like, it's just going to be an entirely much more professional operation, which is weird to say because Pete Carroll was 100%. The head coach, and Pete Carroll's like a model of professionalism. But it's just Brennan Carroll, the Nepo baby offensive coordinator, Chip Kelly and Pete Carroll not being on the same page, the front office and those guys not being on the same page. Everything's just going to feel a lot better in Las Vegas this year. So I'm very excited to actually be in on Ashton Jeanthe this year. Update from Justin Boone. He says he says, I'm literally working on running backs as we speak, so don't hold him to this. But he's got Bashel Tootin at running back, which is amazing timing. He's got him at running back 25. My guess is the ADP on Bashel Tootin will be significantly higher than that. So we'll have those conversations as we go throughout the spring and summer. Give me another winner, you think, from this past week, Chris.
So I'll say the other winner for me is Josh Downs. And I think before we even get into nerding out about Josh Buckle Downs, up. I'd say let's just address the elephant in the room before we start talking about it. Because I know like you, Matt Harmon, you are the president, CEO, and treasurer of the Josh Downs fan club. But I can already hear like the ghosts of people that are listening right now, like, well, who's going to be throwing him the ball and all that. It's like, okay, I get that. Okay, I can understand. So let's caveat all of this with his value being tied to whatever Indy decides to do at quarterback, at least to start 2026, okay? Now, last season, before Daniel Jones' injury, Downs was earning more targets on a per-route basis than Michael Pittman. And also, Josh Downs had more first downs on a per-route basis than Michael Pittman as well. I mean, higher first downs per route run, which, I mean, for a lot of the folks that haven't been like taking into some of the advanced metrics, guys like Ryan Heath over Fantasy Points that have been kind of promoting these types of metrics, I mean, Downs has really been at least one of the better players, at least from that standpoint, at least this past year. Downs also led the wide receivers in red zone targets, 11, scored 3 touchdowns, but I would say the biggest thing is, though, I mean, Indy, we've seen in the past Indianapolis try and get Downs into, let's say, more of a wide receiver one type role when Pittman hasn't been in the lineup. I think it was back in week 10 of 2024 with Pittman out. Downs was up to 71% route rate, 28.6% target rate. Week 16 of 2023, also when Pittman was out, Downs up to a 93% route rate, 25% of the targets. I mean, when they've had their opportunities, I mean, regardless of who's been under center, what is Gardner Minshew back in 2023, the Joe Flacco era of the Colts in 2024, independent of who's been throwing him the ball, when they've had the opportunity to do so, they've put Downs out on the field more often and tried to at least get him more involved in this offense. And I think, and you can speak to this just as well as I can, or better than I can, is that Downs is a good receiver. I mean, he's exceptional as a man beater in man coverage. I mean, he is ranked over Michael Pittman in ESPN's open score in 2 of their 3 seasons together. And also, when you look at his yards per route run against man coverage, also ahead of Michael Pittman in 2 of their 3 seasons together as well. I would say that, not to say that he is the same type of receiver, because at least from a stature standpoint, what, Pittman's maybe at least a solid 6 inches taller than Josh Downs.
Much and probably bigger,
10 to 15 pounds heavier. But still, if you are looking for that type of receiver production where if you want to have him either in the slot, maybe if you want to slide him out to the outside a little bit, not too often, but still, you can get similar production out of Josh Downs as you could as to Michael Pittman. And that's why I can understand them doing the trade to send him to Pittsburgh and keeping Josh Downs and trying to involve him in that offense more, because we've seen them do it in the past. So I think he can take that next step forward in his evolution as a full-on wide receiver too. And I'd like to see it here in 2026.
Obviously, moving on from Pittman, in a big part of it is to keep Alec Pierce. That was quite literally why they did it. They needed to free up the salary space to keep Alec Pierce. That being said, I think you don't make this move to get away from Michael Pittman unless you have a lot of faith in Josh Downs. And to your point, I do think they should have a lot of faith in Josh Downs, because Downs is an awesome player. Like, just to go back to some of the stats that you read off there, even in last year, among wide receivers with 200 plus routes, it's 118 wide receivers. On the Colts, Downs was 24th in targets per route. Michael Pittman was 36th out of those 118 wide receivers. Alec Pierce is 67th. Obviously, Alec Pierce wins downfield. That's why he's not getting as many targets. That number's got to come up to justify the contract, and I think it probably will. I don't think he'll be 67th in targets per route. We'll see how high he can climb. But obviously, for Downs, it's not a skill issue. It's not even like he gets the football when he's on the field issue. It's just not being on the field enough. I mentioned 118 wide receivers ran 200-plus routes. Downs was 56th in route participation, which is lower than like Chimere Dike. It's right ahead of Xavier Hutchinson. Like, obviously, he dealt with some injuries at times, but he just needs to be on the field more. The question, Chris, is do you think the Colts will look at 5'9", sub-180-pound Josh Downs and say he's going to be on the field for every single snap? He's going to be in two receiver sets. I think that's an unknown at this point, and it probably will depend on who they take in the NFL draft, because my guess is that they think we're going to do just what we did with Pierce and Downs and Pittman and Adonai Mitchell, even though that one didn't work out. We're going to take a guy on day two of the draft and see what happens there.
I agree with that approach. And also, I mean, with Tyler Warren essentially stepping in as another able-bodied receiver, not just as a blocker, but then also somebody that can work the short and intermediate parts of the field, that offers them a little bit more flexibility in, I would say, the archetype of receiver that they would need to add, whether, like, to your point, if it's day two or whenever. But I still think that there is a... I think there's a world that exists, and hopefully it's this one, that they view Downs as an every down or as a higher route participation type of wide receiver as compared to the last 2 to 3 years that we've seen from, where his route participation has sit in the 50-60% range. Kick him up into the 80%, have him as a part of two wide receiver sets, and at least have him on the field a bit more often for when whomever's going to be throwing them the ball, that's TBD at this point, at least when they need a bucket, need a first down conversion, he is that guy, or especially once they get into the red zone, they have all of their options there. At least that quarterback would have all of his options available for them in order to convert or wind up getting the Colts into the red zone. So I think that's how they see him. And I think that is might be a little bit of a leap of faith because we haven't seen it yet. But at least from what we've seen so far, enough of the metrics are there to tell us at least there's a possibility to it. Or at least that's a part of his game for what we've seen over the last 3 years or so.
It makes him just a good post-hype sleeper candidate, I think. And people might not be down to draft Josh Downs because, you know, they saw his RP route chart going across the timeline and a bunch of people hyping him up last year, and he obviously did not come through. But again, it's not about talent. It's about being healthy, and it's about being on the field for Josh Downs. So we'll be looking for clues throughout the course of the offseason to see if he can be that guy. Can we just, by the way, take a quick second to applaud my maturity here in like being kind of the voice of reason?
Yes, yes. You were restrained. I was almost expecting you to be like, of course he's a winner. Yes, draft him in the third round.
No, I don't want to get people burned again by Josh Downs in fantasy. But yes, I'm very excited. And I do think he fits as a winner. Another wide receiver I think we got to categorize as a winner here, regardless of what you think about the price that the Bills paid to get him or his contract. I think we do have to say DJ Moore is without question a winner coming out of free agency, going to the Buffalo Bills. The reality is here, like, he just was not a fit in Ben Johnson's offense. He was targeted at the lowest percentage from a targets per route run perspective of his entire career. It was like sub 17% in the regular and postseason combined. And I was trying to explain this to James Coe yesterday, where at different times last year, it just felt like 10 guys were running the Bears offense, and then DJ Moore was kind of doing his own thing. And I don't mean that to take a shot at DJ Moore. I just think he wasn't really a system fit, and I think that's been borne out at this point. And I think it was always kind of, hey, we're gonna have you around here for one more year, and then we'll be gone in terms of this relationship. Landing with the Buffalo Bills is huge for DJ for a variety of reasons. We've talked about the familiarity, of course, with Joe Brady, but one thing I've continued to kind of think about and marinate on is just DJ Moore's route tree. And you see that, like, what he ran a lot last year from a percentage standpoint when I charted him was a lot of those like post routes with to clear stuff out, honestly, like the most sacrificial most expensive sacrificial receiver in the league. Ran a lot of like dig routes, out routes, stuff like that. But if you actually look at the routes that he's best on, as we're showing here on the screen right now, go routes, like 9 routes, curl routes, kind of those deeper stops, which is a lot of what he ran with Justin Fields in that first year in Chicago. And it's a lot of what Keon Coleman has run for the Bills as the X receiver on this team. A lot of go routes and stop routes. Obviously, Coleman's not great at separating. Moore, when he's on, is a good separator, even if he's not the best route technician from a details perspective. I just think he fits really well with Josh Allen. I think he fits really well with Buffalo. So very curious to see where the ADP might be on him, Chris, but I think he does have to get categorized as a winner here.
I agree. I mean, if anything, I know that when the trade was first announced, the reaction was just more of, well, what does that really mean, especially since we've seen the Bills really form into this low ADOT, more run-centric type of offense over the last couple of seasons, featuring their tight ends and really not a ton of production to their wide receivers. But I would say on the flip side, let's look at the quality of wide receivers that they've had. I mean, let's leave the Keon Coleman discussion aside. I mean, have we seen anything from Josh Palmer when he was there? Have we seen anything from Curtis Samuel? Although, I guess now I'm thinking about it, it would have been nice to have Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore playing together again. But
I mean, I know they're boys, dude. There's two ships in the night, man. Have you seen that video of like the, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, when he would like went, Curtis signed with the Commanders, and how DJ changed his number from 12 to 2 because 12 minus 10 is 2.
They would do
that little hug. So
it's a bummer right they're not. They go out on the field. Yeah, I know.
It's a bummer. Yeah, people should look that up if they haven't found it. But yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah. Two ships in the night. It's a bummer.
Yeah, I know that part sucks. But then also the quality of receiver that they've had over the past couple of seasons, does that warrant that type of opportunity that you would see from a requisite wide receiver one? And then on the flip side, let's look at what DJ Moore has had to deal with over his seasons, over his last, even since he entered the league back in 2018. I mean, he went from Cam Newton. So yes, the accuracy, the aggressiveness as a passer, all that was there. But then afterwards, it was Kyle Allen. It was Teddy Bridgewater. It was Sam Darnold. And then, of course, he had endured, I think he endured a little bit of Bryce Young. But then after that, Caleb in his first year, when he was more scattershot and trying to figure out how to get into how to play within structure in 2024. And the same thing here. I was looking at the completion percentage over expected metrics for all the quarterbacks that DJ Moore has played with over the entirety of his career. Just three times he's played with a quarterback that's ranked at top 10 or above, and now he gets to play with Josh Allen, that we know is not just aggressive when he can be, but also we know that since he's made a lot of the shifts in his approach to throwing the football, he has been one of the more accurate quarterbacks in the league. So delivering a quality pass to a quality receiver, I know it sounds simplistic, like when I say it, but it's just, this is how you can get the type of production that you would want out of a wide receiver. So am I pushing DJ Moore up into the second round? No, but I would say where he's probably going to be valued at, which I'm assuming is probably somewhere in the third-ish round. Again, I could see that being at least a reasonable price for a wide receiver of his quality and also the offense he's going to be a part of.
Yeah, I bet it comes in even lower than that from an ADP standpoint. He never played with Bryce Young because he was part of the Bryce Young trade. That was the year that he had with
Justin Fields.
That's right. To that point, though, about Justin Fields, like, just different quarterbacks and wide receivers see the game differently. And like, those two guys were on the same page. And I obviously, Josh Allen is worlds better than Justin Fields, but just some of the throws that those guys like to make do overlap. So I think that's why it's just a good pairing with DJ Moore here, in addition to the fact that Josh Allen is awesome. Okay, give me another one of your winners from free agency.
So my last winner is going to be Christian Watson. And I would just say that I say his name, but I would say that you could just expand that to be the Green Bay Packers wide receivers at all. I mean, honestly, because when we talk about the crowded wide receiver rooms across the league, I mean, especially for the Packers, it's just, if you play on a, I would say, efficient but low volume type of passing game, it's each week from a fantasy standpoint, who do you want in your lineup? Because we can talk about Christian Watson and the highs that he had, but that was also at the expense of not having a healthy Jaden Reed for part of the season. Tucker Kraft not also being there for most of the season as well. So it's just having to take all of that in context, but then let's just look at Christian Watson and how he performed in 2025 alone. Active for 11 regular season games, target share over 20% in five of them, target share over 30% in two of them. I mean, you and I, we sat down and recapped a couple of those games where he was just going berserk in like multiple in over like those short stretches where he was the team's leader in air yards, but also in targets as well. But then it's also the efficient targets that we started to see as well. I mean, over 30% of Jordan Love's targets off of play action went to Christian Watson. So if we're thinking about play action targets as something of a force multiplier from a production standpoint, and Christian Watson is getting those, I mean, that's where we should now start to really consider him as at least in that, let's say, mid-ish range, like wide receiver two, because there's still, I would say, some level of incompleteness to his game. And so even with Romeo Doubs leaving to the Patriots, and that's leaving some sort of a void in the Packers pecking order, it's how much of that can Christian Watson really take over? Because when you think of Romeo Doubs, I mean, a lot of outbreakers, hitches, inbreakers, a screen or two there for Doubs. Can Christian Watson really form into or take over some of that from a route development standpoint? Because really, a lot of what Christian Watson was running last season, go routes, some intermediate to deep crossers, I mean, those types of routes to really get him in stride and keep him moving and allow him to use his speed in order to create those explosives. So, I mean, again, that's kind of wish casting to think that Watson is going to take over a lot of that role, but at least he is a part of a team that at least the aggressiveness is going to be there. Because Jordan Love has ranked sixth or better in terms of air yards per attempt over the last three seasons, also still continue to be efficient as a passer when he's healthy. I mean, the Packers from an EPA per passing play standpoint ranked seventh or better over the last three seasons. So at least the infrastructure is there for Watson to continue doing what he's doing. But the hope would be that he moves into this role or maybe a slightly larger role from a route development standpoint now with Romeo Doubs in New England.
Yeah, it's just losing Doubs, like, who just was the guy that was always on the field because he was that X receiver. It opens up opportunity for Watson, who's coming off his best NFL season by a long margin, at least to me. I just was so impressed with what he did last year. And he's right now easily their best perimeter receiver because they view Jaden Reed as a slot-only player to this point. And I have no idea what to think about Matthew Golden. Like, I got to go back and chart some of the Matthew Golden stuff later in the year because beginning, middle of the year, it was it's okay. So I do agree with you that Watson is certainly a winner here. My last one, and I'll just play the hits on this one, all roads lead back to Ladd McConkey. I think he is a quiet winner from this week, mainly because, talked about this with Boone, their signing of Alec Ingold at fullback and Charlie Kolar at tight end clearly indicates that this team is going to be much more heavy personnel focused this year than they were last year. I've mentioned this stat before, but the Chargers were fifth in the NFL in terms of percentage of plays with three plus wide receivers overall last year. It was actually higher on passing plays. I saw a post from Ryan Heath, who already mentioned him twice on this episode. Love to see that. Ryan noted that wide receivers score 32% more fantasy points when fewer than three wide receivers are on the field. Again, last year, Chargers were third. McDaniel, he had was fourth fewest on passing plays. And again, their moves this offseason, signing Kolar as a inline guy who can catch passes for sure, but also is going to be an asset in the blocking game. And you know they're not just going to bench Aronde Gadsden. Signing Alec Ingold, like, they're going to be a pretty heavy personnel package team. And they view Ladd as a guy who's not like a slot-only player. He's never been that for them. They've played him on all the downs. So I think he's going to be on the field a ton. He's going to get that target concentration overall. So big, like, quietly a big winner from free agency. And it is the fact that they added Tyler Biadasz at center, which will be a big upgrade. We'll see about Cole Strange at guard replacing Zion Johnson. But again, healthier offensive line, new system, heavier personnel packages. Ladd McConkey's target per route rate is without question to me going to go up.
Oh, 100%. And now we saw that shift last season with some of his role from 2024 kind of getting piece parsed out to some of the inclusions or even just other players on the roster taking a step forward. Because a lot of the deep ball targets that we saw from 2024, some of those started to go to QJ here in his second or third season, rather, like as him to, he started to take a leap forward. Some of the third and fourth down work, I mean, while it was he had almost a quarter of those targets back in 2024, they fell with Keenan Allen starting to take over some of those like obvious passing situation type work. So I agree with you that with that shift and also Mike McDaniel, and especially during his first presser, I think when he came on as the Chargers OC, it was the discussion of let's make some layups. Let's try and make things as simplistic as possible. possible for Justin Herbert. And I think a lot of that would have to do with having Ladd McConkey get back into, I'd say, a fairly similar role to what we saw in his rookie season to what we saw in 2025. So I agree that I think the arrow's pointing up for McConkey here in 2026 for sure.
All right, those are your winners coming out of free agency. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, we'll talk through some folks who are losers after the first 2 days of free agency. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. All right, let's get negative here, Chris. We got to do it.
Do we have
talk
to?
Talk me through some loot. We don't have, they're making us, let's be honest. Yahoo is making us be negative. They said we need the hate headlines, the hate bump, okay? So listen, we're just adjust expectations on these players. Maybe we can set it up there that way. Is. So yeah, let's manage expectations. That's what we're going to be doing here today. Who's the first player, Chris, you want the people to manage expectations on?
Actually, for this guy, I would say to have no expectations for, other than maybe him personally performing great, because I don't want any player coming after me. But I'll say Brees Hall has to be on the losing side of this free agency period.
Okay, Brees might actually be a loser. Like, that looks really harsh. The big red loser there looks really harsh if you're watching.
Yeah, that looks rough.
Great graphic work as always on the show. But yeah. Right. Anyways, so.
God,
continue here, Chris. But I do think Brees is probably feeling a little bit of a loser vibe, you know, coming. Same with the Jets, the whole deal. Anyways, get into it.
Yeah, because if you look at his situation, right? I mean, behind, I'd say average to below average offensive line. I mean, they swap out John Simpson at left guard, I think, for Dylan Parham from the Raiders. And if you're taking one of the Raiders castoffs, if we just saw what happened to Ashton Jeanty last season, I don't know how that really works out all that well. But anyway, still, last season, league average and run block win rate, 19th in adjusted yards before contact. And we saw a lot of that in how Brees Hall was trapped behind their offensive line on multiple runs. But then it's not just the run blocking singularly, it's that offense as a whole. I mean, defense, they just don't respect the Jets' passing attack, I mean, which puts more pressure on somebody like Brees Hall in order to perform. I mean, I look back over the past five seasons, you know, Garrett Wilson is their only 1,000-yard receiver over the past five seasons. Nobody else that they've had on that roster has even met that, 1,000-yard receiver metric, which isn't surprising once you say it out loud, but it's like, man, it's like, could you really not get anything else out of some of the receivers that have come through that door? I mean, from an EPA per pass play, they've ranked 30th or below in two of the last three seasons, 28th or below in four of the last five. I mean, it really does, again, put so much strain on your running game if there's no complementary passing game in order to go with it. And it works vice versa. I mean, but this is also the thing that is so bothersome about all of it is that Brees Hall is a good running back. I mean, if not for just the rushing portion of the game, he's actually really effective as a receiver. I mean, all the way back in, I think it was 2022 or 2023, he ranked third in yards per route run amongst all running backs, 90 targets back then. And since then, it started to dwindle in terms of how often he's been targeted, but still been efficient as a receiver as they continue to try and use him as much as possible. So I understand why they continue to give him touches in all phases of the game, and he's effective in doing so, but still, without having the complementary pass game, without having the blocking up front in order to really let him excel, and no changes have really been made in order to address that in the offseason. Yes, trade back or bring Geno Smith back into the locker room. Okay, that's okay. Maybe get a little bit more competency under center. Not a more ton up front for him. And of course, the receiving game, which again, is still going to be an issue. I mean, that still leads me to believe that this not much is going to change for Brees Hall in 2026, as we've seen in 2024 or 2025.
Only thing I might disagree with you on is that, like, I think the offensive line could actually be decent this year. Some of the younger guys maybe taking a step forward. And I think, you know, but they're to this point, I think they're better pass protectors and run blockers to your overall point about the stats there. But other than that, it's like you want to say, well, it can't get worse with Geno Smith under center. The defense can't get worse than what it was last year. It can always get worse. It can always get worse. Okay. So there is that. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, there was some hope that Brees could get out of New York. He was never getting out of New York. They were always going to tag him. They was always going to keep him around. And unfortunately, it just is what it is. Another running back that I think is a loser coming out of free agency, Chris, is Bucky Irving. Number one, the Bucks wave goodbye to Rashad White, well, too bad, because they go around and replace him with Kenny Gainwell. And Gainwell is just a great – yeah, not great. He's going to be there for long down and distances. He's going to be kind of the design passing game guy as well. I think that we do as a fantasy community, and I don't know how to do this, so like here's me pitching an idea without an actual solution. We have to start differentiating guys who are like – good in the passing game without just referring to how many balls they caught. Because like Bucky Irving, you look at his rookie year, it's like, well, he was good in the passing game. He was good in the screen game. But in terms of like being involved as an act, like with routes and stuff like that, to this point, the Bucks have not trust Bucky Irving with that. And once they lost Liam Cohen, the screen game god, like that has just not been able to replicate itself last year. I don't know if that's going to happen here with Zach Robinson. We'll see. Getting Gainwell makes me hesitant to believe that it is going to happen. And then they kind of changed their mind on Sean Tucker, who they were going to let walk, but then they decided to give him the exclusive rights free agency designation. He's sticking around the team. He took goal line work away from Bucky Irving. Now, to be clear, Sean Tucker might not even make the roster. Like if they were that not convinced he was, he might not be. Bucky Irving might end up being the goal line back, but still Gainwell being involved, I think does limit the ceiling of Bucky Irving. And it is just funny to me, Chris, and this actually probably does dovetail with our Bashel Tootin conversation. The fantasy community is funny. Like, especially Dynasty Bros, they're usually like, hey, day three running backs who flash, like don't get crazy about those guys. Okay. Like don't go over your skis. Very selective in deciding when that happens, because I didn't feel like there was any of that hesitation with Bucky Irving. Same with like Cam Scadaboo, same with like Bashel Tootin. Is if like if you like the guy, sure, throw that rule out. If you didn't like the guy, you know, you go ahead and remember that rule. It just feels like we should have a little bit of caution with Bucky as a pass catcher, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, I would say caution is the right term, because I don't think anybody's saying that his stock is completely plummeted or don't draft him at all. But it's just, should we now question what his usage is going to be in 2026? And I think that's the proper way to approach it. Because like you were just saying with the Tootin conversation, where do, at least with the information we have right now, where do we think that the Bucks really want to feature Bucky Irving? Because if it was to continue having him as your early down runner, and then maybe still also have him as your third down pass catcher type role, and then also as feature him on short yardage, well, okay, well, then I would question the short yardage portion because they kept Sean Tucker, to your point. I would now also have to question his usage as a receiver, because even if you want to question Kenny Gainwell's usage as a receiver in Pittsburgh as being part of a broken offense, he was still effective in doing so. He was still fifth in yards per route run around amongst most running backs, like when he was targeted. So if they see him as being at least impactful in that phase, now we have to question whether Bucky can take over that role, or at least retake that role. Because towards the earlier parts of the season, I think the first month or so, about a 15% target rate for Bucky Irving, that fell off after he came back from injury. And I would say for the first couple of weeks, we could say that, yeah, he's getting back into the offense, he's getting back into the swing of things. But once it got later into the season, and it's them thinking that they're going to push for a playoff spot or whatever, and he's still not getting that rollback, and Sean Tucker is still getting goal line carries, and Rashad White is still getting targets, and he's still trying to battle for that role, I would have the same questions as you have about what his actual usage and on-field deployment is going to be in 2026, especially after these signings.
Both of our next two guys play for the Pittsburgh Steelers, to stick on this Kenny Gainwell theme here. So we can kind of double up on this one, but give me yours, which is the guy in the passing game first.
Yeah, DK Metcalf. I mean, you trade for another wide receiver. I would say anybody would have questions about what that usage for the incumbent is going to be moving forward. But especially a guy like Michael Pittman, who has had earned like no less than 20% of the team's targets over the last three seasons when he was in Indianapolis. So you go from DK Metcalf having the competition of Calvin Austin, MVS, Adam Thielen, who's traded for midway throughout the season, Roman Wilson, to, I would say at the very least, a legitimate wide receiver that DK Metcalf is going to have to compete with for targets. And I mean, we'll toss out who's going to be throwing them the ball, because the whole Aaron Rodgers of it all is really something that's still up in flux. Really wish we'd get a decision on that, but hey, he does whatever he wants to do.
Be nice.
But I would say even still, the 2025 usage for DK Metcalf would have us wanting more, or at least have some questions about his wide receiver role status in 2026 and beyond. Because yeah, he was sitting at a 23% target share on the season, 12 games over 20%, a couple of games over 30%, all great. I mean, these those numbers, you would think, okay, that's around like wide receiver one usage. Okay, fine. But he had just one game with double-digit targets, five games with five or fewer targets. And so now you bring in a known target earner in Michael Pittman. And it's not just the fact that he can earn or at least garner that opportunity, but also where Michael Pittman typically runs his routes. I mean, a lot of folks will probably go to that highlight from DK Metcalf when they were overseas. I think it was playing the Vikings, and he had that, what, short yep. slot screen or whatever that he took for 70 yards and touchdown. That would be Michael Pittman. That would not be DK Metcalf, like, lining up in that spot and running that route. Especially now with both of them on the field, that would almost pigeonhole DK Metcalf into having more outside or perimeter work. Michael Pittman plays the Z or in the slot, and now you have more volatile work for Metcalf moving forward. It almost kind of pigeonholes him into the same situation he was in towards the back end of his time in Seattle. So I would have some really grave concerns about what Metcalf is going to be from a value standpoint. He might be on-field effective for the Steelers, but not as effective for fantasy. At least that's how I'm looking or trying to approach it here for 2026.
Yeah, Boone and I talked about this a lot, and if it is Rodgers under center, like, it just, to me, Michael Pittman fits his game at this moment a lot cleaner than where Metcalf is. So you and I are definitely on the same page with this one. Curious how you feel about Jaylen Warren in the backfield. I kind of think he's a loser out of this too. Now, the biggest loser is like anyone who drafted Caleb Johnson in Dynasty last year. Like, if you had like the little tiny hope that oh boy, like, don't worry, he's gonna come back in year two. No, he's not. Like, Rico Dowdle is gonna be the starting running back for this team, and that's sort of where I worry about Jaylen Warren too. There's been some headlines like, oh, he's gonna move into Kenny Gainwell's role, and I think he does fit that as a pass catching back, but Gainwell had that role because Rodgers trusted him and loved him so much. Does he have the same affection for Jaylen Warren? Again, I'm assuming Rodgers is the quarterback here. If he's not, then really everything's out of the window for Jaylen Warren, because then I just think like Rico Dowdle is a better between the tackles runner at this point and is the guy that I think will be the favorite to lead the team in carries this year. Knows Mike McCarthy. He's a good runner. He can also play on passing downs as well. So I feel like for Warren to not be a complete loser, he's got to be paired up with Aaron Rodgers. But to this point, we'll see if that happens. Otherwise, I think this is a pretty tough moment for Jaylen Warren, who I think will be behind Dowdle to start the year at the very least.
Yeah, I would think so at the very least to start the season. And then it's almost even a worse situation than the Jaylen Warren, Kenny Gainwell discussion. Because at least with Gainwell, we had at least some level of, okay, well, Gainwell might not be the short yardage guy. He's probably just more of the passing guy. All right, so Warren might still get some of the early down touches and maybe get some short yardage work. And then it's really going to be Gainwell once again to obvious passing situations. We could figure, at least over time, we were able to figure out their roles. But Rico Dowdle, kind of to your point, we don't know what those two roles are going to be, because Dowdle can work in all phases of a running back's usage from fantasy standpoint. Effective as a receiver, 1.36 yards per route run, had the same explosive play rate as Derrick Henry last year. I mean, he was just behind Bijan Robinson at early down effectiveness. On first and second down, his success rate was just about the same. So if he can play and operate as essentially in every down running back, and now you're going to pair him with Jaylen Warren, who most folks would want to see as an every down running back, or at least has been able to do so over the last couple of seasons, having to share that backfield. It's just going to be more questions about how many touches are we going to have to divvy up between this backfield. And to say nothing about Caleb Johnson, but I'd say Warren specifically, if anybody had any hopes that he was going to now take a step forward and get more work, now he just runs right back into that RB2 role with Rico Dowdle coming into the fold.
All right, we each got to give one more loser here. Got to be quicker with these ones. Chris, give me one last guy that, again, you're managing expectations on after free agency.
Tyler Allgeier, why? I asked Tyler Allgeier why, and I'm asking the Arizona Cardinals why. It's just like, why? We didn't need to do this. Why did we need to do this? for the Cardinals standpoint, they already had James Conner because they wound up bringing him back for another year. Trey Benson is on the roster at least through 2027. All right. Then
for now.
For now. Sure. And then for Algier, he had shown enough production in the past that if he had tried to go to a team that at least had a larger opening, let's say if he wanted to go to the Chiefs, or at least he tried to at least fit in back with, try to take or fill the void that Kenneth Walker was going to leave in Seattle, at least there, at least a path to having a featured running back slot, I could see that. But now this is a team that is presumably trying to at least look at 2027 and beyond and forget whatever happens in the 2026 season. So if you want to try and tell yourself that Algier is going to be the running back of the future, when is that future going to start? Is it going to be in 2027 when they presumably try and draft their quarterback of the future? Or will it be the year after when they try and I'm assuming it's going to be maybe a new coaching staff or a new front office change at that point. So it's just my concern with Algier and his path forward is just, where is the value going to come from? Where the touch is going to come from? And also in a situation such as the Cardinals, it's just, where is that offensive production going to come from in order to sustain him as a running back? Because really the only Cardinals players are going to be drafting are probably going to be tight end, maybe a wide receiver or two, and that's it. So I'm out on Tyler Algier for 2026.
I want to remain open-minded on this one just because it should still be an ambiguous backfield. He was a guy they just gave some money to, but it would be a lot cleaner if James Conner wasn't going to be in the mix. So I agree with you. That makes it a little bit murky here. All right, for my last, I want to say a guy that I think maybe manage expectations on. I want your feedback on this because if anybody clips this, I want my caveat to be known that I'm just take shopping this right now. I'm not like 100% saying this guy's going to suck this year or anything like that. I want that on the record. If anyone's going to clip this better be a part of the clip. Okay, with that being said, is Devon Achane not a little bit of a loser coming out of free agency? I just gave a great like headline. They're definitely clipping that one. And here, let me just say this is my thought. Obviously, McDaniel leaving, that stinks, whatever. Here's the other thing with Devon Achane. A huge part of what has made him such an awesome fantasy player has been his ability as a pass catcher, especially the last 2 years. So this is where he ranks among running backs in certain passing metrics the last 2 years combined. 175 targets, that's second. 145 catches, that's first. 1,080 yards, that is third at the running back position. 240.5 half PPR points from passing plays alone the last 2 years, that is first among running backs. 43.7% of his total points have come on passing plays the last 2 years combined. Are we not about to see him have a significant reduction in passing volume with Tua out and Malik Willis in? Again, I don't know if I officially believe this, but I do think given the history of mobile quarterbacks and how they often are not, and so many just disgusting checkdowns from Tua over and over again the last couple of years, gross for football, good for fantasy for Devon Achane, those are out the door. And typically for a guy like Malik Willis, he's going to take off and run before he gets to that point in the progression. So again, I don't 100% believe this, but I do think it's worth asking the question for Achane right now.
And I think that's a fair question. Then it's also almost a corollary to what we were discussing with Breece Hall. It's just, if teams start to not respect the passing game because you don't have a guy like Mike McDaniel as your schemer, you don't have Tyreek Hill there to help in terms of pulling safeties back and making sure that they have to respect the intermediate and deep parts of the field, do we start to see more stacked boxes for a guy like Devon Achane, who, while he has been effective as a pass catcher, has kind of struggled as a runner of at least in 2025. I mean, last season was his highest stacked box rate, or 8 men in the box, was around 40% last year. Year beforehand, 33%, and he was splitting time with Raheem Morris back in 2023. It was around, like, all the way down to like around 17%. So now if the passing game starts to struggle and teams start to essentially figure out like what they're trying to do with Malik Willis, like, does that start to then impact both the rushing and passing game that we would assume Achane is going to be a part of? So yeah, I have similar questions. So I would say, I mean, for that graphic about Devon Achane being a loser, like, loser with like an asterisk next to it. Like, can we do that? Like, yeah, it's like loser mark or something along those lines. Like, I think that's where I'm at. So I agree that he could potentially be a loser just looking at how the Dolphins are set up for 2026 as of right now.
Listen, I want it, no pun intended here because we're talking Dolphins. I wanted to go for a bigger fish here. And I know that Please don't at me about your freaking oceanography. Right, don't at me about oceanography jokes, okay? Please. But I wanted to go for a bigger fish here. Nobody's like, Jalen Warren, a loser coming out of nobody cares, okay? But if Devon Achane's stock is on the decline, that's actually something worth talking about. So again, we're simply asking questions here on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. We're going to take another quick break. We come back. We're going to break down biggest fantasy questions. We've each got one coming out of free agency. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. So we've talked winners and losers. Real quick before we get out of here, Chris and I are each just going to throw out our pressing question coming out of free agency and something that, again, we don't have answers for right now, but we're just considering over the next few months of the offseason. Mine is, how are we going to rank these Bucks wide receivers post Mike Evans departure? Because obviously Mecca Igbuka, first round pick, had a good rookie year, even if obviously it was ups and downs and mostly big up and then big down as the season went on. Still a player I think we're optimistic about. Chris Godwin, power slot, he's back. Jalen McMillan flashed at the end of the year. I think this is going to be a topic of debate in the offseason in fantasy. For me, I'm still marinating on it, because especially I don't totally know how all three of these guys are going to fill out from a role perspective. But what I do like is that Zach Robinson, the OC who was with Atlanta, he got everybody slot reps in 2024. All of Darnell Mooney, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and Ray-Ray McCloud took over 35% of their routes from the slot. I think that's a good piece of information to consider as we think about these Bucks guys, because they all do need some work from the slot, at least in my opinion. So definitely something I'm going to be thinking about over the coming months. Chris, what is a question you have coming out of free agency?
So my question is, how hyped or how much should I really get into this Saints offense for 2026? Towards the back end of 2026, I know we talked about it. I called it as the Saints are going to be the wild card team coming out of the NFC South on our last show with Fitzy Boone and both of us.
Right.
But now they add Travis Etienne, another year with Chris Olave in this system with Kellen Moore. We have seen at least some sparks from that offense with Tyler Shuck under center. So now I have at least a bit of excitement. I'm trying not to get overexcited, but now with the additions, and also added in Noah Fant as a tight end. So it's like not a bunch of needle movers, but enough cumulatively that they should be able to at least put together an offense that we should want to continue to invest in 2026. So I'm excited about it. But again, I don't want to get over my skis, because after they ended having to throw passes to Dante Pettis, it's like now we can add a bit more juice to this offense. So I'm really excited to see what the Saints look like in 2026.
Well, it's a good thing we got to get out of here, because you're asking the wrong guy. I'm already way too excited about this Saints offense, and I'm going to feel I need to talk myself back over the course of these next few months. So I'm with you on the optimism, and I like the Etienne and Edwards signing as well. That is going to do it for today's show. Chris, great to have you back. Awesome to break it down with you. Appreciate you jumping on here, and hopefully we don't get clipped too hard for some of our losers. We will see how that goes. So good to see you, Chris. Good to talk with you as always. This show will be back on Monday with another edition of Mock Draft Monday. We've got Danny Kelly from The Ringer coming in, electric set of players to break down with him. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be back live with Justin Boone at 2 p.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. And we are opening up the panic meter. That's right. Who are you guys freaking out about? Post-free agent edition. Send in your post-free agency panic to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. And we're going to do our best to answer all of them. Fill that mailbag up. I'm really excited. Dynasty base, redraft, whatever it is. Send your panic emails. Again, fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Until then, we are out.